Next up is Matthew Perry. The late actor was one half of one of the most beloved couples in sitcom history. But in a new interview with TMZ, Perry's season 5 finale co-star, Lisa Cash, revealed that her character almost derailed Monica and Chandler's love story.
Being able to audition for a guest starring role on Friends is huge anyway. But then it's a pivotal role because Matthew Perry, Chandler wanted to talk about it, and she said no, she was at the table. So he drifts off, and originally he goes upstairs to his room, he orders room service, and I come in as a wait staff, bring him his room service. And then we end up talking, and he ends up cheating on her. And I mean, this was like amazing, and rehearsing with him was so wonderful and so easy and giving, and like he could have been this, intimidating, star, but he wasn't. He was just a person. He was just really nice, and he was giving. And we rehearsed it, and we blocked it. And then I had come in the day before tape day. I don't even remember who came over to me. It was probably the second AD. And he said, I had come out in L.A. in 1993, and I was doing a lot of TV. And I had heard, the TV shows go on hiatus around mid-April until mid-July. But I guess I didn't really think, well, that's them. Like, I'm going to work still, I just didn't realize, the industry pretty much shuts down. And I didn't know how I was going to pay my bills. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, there's no work until mid-July. And it's much different now with all the streaming services and everything like that. But in 1993, you weren't working, unless you could find
it's
a film.
It's shut down.
Yeah. Like, and so luckily, my mom will be like, see, I told you. I think at the end of the year, you kind of evaluate, what's going on. Yes. Am I happy? And I've always said, because when I first started, my mom's like, how long are you going to do this? You have a degree in accounting and everything like that. And
I wasn't
too happy about it. And I kept saying, I'm going to do it as long as I love it. That's my answer.
That's an artist.
Yeah. I'm not going to give myself a time limit or whatever, as long as I'm happy and I love it. So.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Create Your Audio's.in podcast. I am Ajay Tambe, the host and producer of the show. And you all know this show is all about fiction stories, audio dramas, and stories from all different genres, where I invite all of the artists to be a guest storyteller on the show, and then I interview them. But here's one more segment that has started, where I interview artists just to know their journey and how can their journey help other upcoming artists. So today I have with me a very special guest, and she is extremely talented, and I got connected to her when the news of the Friends broke out, and it was completely bizarre news, and it was like that news actually got her into a different kind of limelight. But she actually revealed something that really made people, this was the thing. And that's really crazy, and that's where I connected with her. So before I talk more about her, firstly I'll introduce, welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Great. So I'm really happy that that particular conversation led us to the interview and you agreed. I guess we had a bit of two-month gap where you completely busy in that whole press and all kind of things for Friends. So please tell me how this thing happened, that Friends thing, that news that broke out, that completely, every fan, even I was like, what?
I know.
And that was a thing.
It's a secret I kept for 24 years. I didn't, think, about telling it. And then after Matthew Perry passed, someone approached me and said, did you know him? And I told him a short little, thing about what happened. And he's like, I think the world would really like to hear that. I think it's beautiful tribute to him. And I said, really? And he goes, would you be willing to talk to TMZ about that? And I didn't think they'd be interested. I was like, if you think so, I don't know, sure. And then I kind of felt like awkward. I was like, I don't know. I feel weird about it. But then it ended up being this beautiful, gorgeous thing that fans are so excited to hear about. And it keeps him, in the memories of everyone. So many things have done spinoffs about it. Like, the top secrets of, 10 shows. And it's like number 2 or whatever, it's like a big deal. Yeah. And so I'm so happy that I could be a part of that and a part of, being his, tribute and memory to everyone. It was really neat.
Thank you so much for breaking that news. You have no idea how it made all the Friends fan feel a different, a cool attachment to Matthew Perry. And, oh God, this actor, he did this. I mean, he know what kind of impact it could have been if it went the other way. And that's really tricky. And, you know, it could have been, you know, broken heart, like the way the Ross and Rachel thing did. But yeah, thank you so much. And before now, this is the one thing that's really trending about you. But before we talk all about your projects, how, like how you started, what's going on in your life, I just want to switch back to you as a kid in your childhood days. So tell me about you, where you grew up, how your school phase was, how were you as a kid with your friends, family, how was it?
Well, back when I was growing up, it was more unusual. I was a single parent child. Like a lot of my friends all had the traditional families and everything.
Yeah.
I was an only child. I was a single parent child. And my mom was really young when she had me. She got pregnant at 18. So we actually grew up together and we were more friends, you know, which brought us really close, you know, and gave us that different relationship than parent and child. It was just best friends and almost sisters. Now, you know, we do have more of the parent child, I think, but growing up, it was really neat too. Plus my mom was that hot mom that all the guys like and everything.
Like,
we come chaperone dances and they're like, who's that? That's my mom. Oh.
So it was that you were like 6-year, 8-year, 10-year-old and they were talking about your mom a lot often. That was a thing for you.
And then we sounded like each other on the phone too. So like when I started getting dating ages and my boyfriends would call or she had people call, like they think I was her or whatever. And we're like, I'm not her. Stop talking.
Oh God. So this is really a different childhood, you know, you growing up with what we can say a woman who is 26 when you're 6 year old, when you're in first grade, she was around 24, 25. She's like growing up in her youth. You were growing with her. And she was in 30s, I guess. That's where you actually went into your teenage phase. So how was that phase? Like, was it more filled with, you know, judgments or people accepted it? And how you grew up? Like, you used to get, like, you told me it was kind of cool thing, you know, calling him. But how you used to take it? Was it like, oh, people are judging me and this thing? How you prepared yourself? Like, were you used to it? It got used to or...
I mean, I was used to understanding that I was like not the norm when I was in elementary school and junior high. Yeah. But I think when you get to high school, people's, you know, parents are starting to get a divorce and it's starting to kind of be normal. And I still had the hot mom that everybody liked. Yeah. But, you know, I was that normal teenage angst where I was like, I hate you, blah, blah, blah. You know, we'd argue and everything. And I felt, now I feel so terrible that my poor mom, she put up with so much. But it's just going through finding your own identity as a teenager and everything.
Yeah.
And like, I did leave at 18. I was like, you know, she said, you know, once you're 18, you're going to pay rent. Then I'm out of here. So, you know, I move out and everything. But I just moved to college. It wasn't this big, huge move. You know, I moved on campus and everything. But then you're an independent and, you know, choosing everything. And so, but it brought us back together and everything, too. Once, you know, go out into the world and see, okay. Yeah.
A different you.
Yeah.
Yeah. A grown up you. It's not like, that's where you got mature. You know, what it feels to be a woman in the free world and going out yourself and dealing with people by yourself. That's where I guess you guys connected more in that particular place.
It was kind of interesting though, because, you know, in junior high is where I first found the bug for acting. Like I was always a singer. I was a singer in elementary school and in musicals and voice lessons. I always wanted to be a singer. So, but I never thought of acting. And in elementary school, we had to take everything. They said, no, you have to take shop. You have to take woodwork. You have to take cooking and sewing, which I think is wonderful because then you're like letting kids figure out what they like, you know, and have a chance for it. And so I had to take acting, which was not my first choice, but I ended up being the lead in my first two plays. Mrs. Marshall was my teacher. She was awesome. Wow. And it was freeing. It was so much fun. Although I loved singing, I didn't have the confidence I had when I was acting. When I was acting, it just felt easy. It was awesome. When I was going to college and I was like, I'm going to major in music or acting. And my mom's like, no, you're not.
It's like, what?
Oh, yeah. And like from my, you know, cash women, we all went to college. This was not a choice. You're going to college, you know. But yeah, the major, she's like, nope, you're going to major in something that you can fall back on. So I did have to find something else that I loved, and I loved numbers. So I majored in accounting, which helped me now with contracts and helps me help my friends and everything. So that was like, no, you're not majoring in acting or music. That's why I went to tea after I got my degree. So I did that on my own. But like during teenage years too, I would do modeling classes in San Francisco. And again, I think it was a good thing. My mom said, if you want to do these classes, you're going to pay for them and you're going to find your way there at 15 years old. And so going into the city in San Francisco was kind of scary. You know, I'm from San Mateo but I would find my way there and I'd pay for them. And I feel like that makes you value it more and invest yourself more, your time and effort. And I really enjoyed it, doing the classes and getting, the different views and everything. I mean, I did runway, which is unheard of now because I'm 5'2", but I've done some runway, which was fun. And a lot of, I became someone who would help others take pictures. Like I'd help them pose and choose out their wardrobe and, stuff like that. So it was a good learning foundation. So before I even went to ACT. So, and then ACT was just even better,
Great. So what I get from you is high school, I guess, in high school, you started singing. So you gave up on singing. Are you still singing songs? How's the relation with singing now?
Yeah, I actually started singing in elementary school and I was in...
So who taught you? How did this interest came out? Who taught you? Tell me about it. Like why? How did this happen?
I don't know why I started singing because I was so young when I started singing. I loved performing and everything, as a singer. And I would dream of I'm in a rock band and all the boys I liked are playing guitar and drums and I'm the singer.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I guess it was just you were feeling the safe thing that's what you are. That's what the energy were. You were vibing on that particular era, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I was feeling down or anything, singing would just touch my heart and make me feel better or release any emotions I needed to release. But I didn't really have the confidence, even though I had a lot of, personal instructors. And then I did a lot of musical theater. I just didn't have the confidence in my singing. And so, I said, I found that in my acting. Surprisingly, I was just like, wow, I'm the lead in my first two plays. Like, I was just crazy, but it was actually funny. I did have nerves. The day of my first play or performance we're supposed to have for the whole theater or the whole, class in eighth grade. And my mom said, you don't feel good? And I said, no, I'm not going to go. She goes, so you're not going to be in the play. You're going to let your understudy do it. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, you sure about that?
That's cool.
So she kind of helped me give me that push to go do it. And it was great. It was fun. And I just, I guess you're nervous to remember your lines or whatever and stuff like that. And it was fun. So
it was great. So when it stopped, the love for music or, I want to be a musician or music artist, when it stopped?
Well, I think actually when I moved to LA and I was doing acting, I was trying to do some music then too, but people were trying to form me into people I wasn't. Like, I don't mind singing country. Oh. I like country, but I'm more of a country rock or pop. And I had producers trying to give me the fringe of the country and the hat. Oh. And then I had another producer trying to get me to rap. They're like, oh, no one would expect you to rap, And I was like, this isn't me. And then I had people, friends in the music industry, look at contracts that I was given and they're like, no, this is really bad.
The deal was not good.
So I feel like I fell into acting because it was easier and it didn't seem the things that
connected
I
connected a lot.
Yeah. It didn't seem as corrupt too. I mean, just all the contracts for music seem to have these secret little things that unless you had a lawyer.
Shady deals.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. A lot of shady deals.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I did, although I came out with a sample album. It had 5 songs on it and that, it was just awesome because I ended up, I was dating someone who was this incredible musician that wrote songs. He played guitar, he played drums, he played tons of instruments. And so we collaborated and he gave me that confidence and we went in the studio and we put down those 5 tracks. And a lot of the songs were about us and everything. So that was such an experience. And we had it up on iTunes for a long time and that was really cool. And then we ended up writing some more. We wrote a vampire song for one of the movies I did. And, I would kind of co-collaborate. Like he would really write most of the stuff, but I would help. It was like, what about this word? And, what about this?
good.
And that was just such an amazing experience. I would love to get back in the studio at some point, but at least I've done that, And the cover was gorgeous. Like this guitar, sexy and stuff.
Got it. Awesome. So what I get from now here is the acting feels very natural or very relatable. was it the roles that you got, or was it nothing related to roles, just the energy, and you were good with whatever was coming to you? Or was it the role that, you know, you just connected with that girl or that woman that you're playing? What was it that made you really in the initial phase?
And I think also when I was younger, I was always playing this teen angst with crying or like the peppy cheerleader. So I feel like a lot of it was me. And I know people have a lot of different ways that they get into acting, but I try to bring a piece of me. I try to base it upon something that I have in my past that gives me that emotion that she's feeling now. And so I feel like that's how it was relatable. And I feel like in my own life, I was very kind of closed off emotionally. I didn't like people to see me cry. I was, you know, really tough and independent. But in my acting, I could let it go and
let it go.
Loved it. And that's what they liked, is when I was crying or angry or sad, or, you know, all these emotions, I could release them in acting and get paid for it and get accoladed for it. Everyone's like, oh my God, that was amazing. But I just let it go there. So, because I held on so tightly in my real life to keep on this face, you know?
The tough face.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is really hard, you know, impossible kind of ways, because, you know, through navigating through the world, we actually tend to make yourself very firm. Okay, I can't lose myself for this particular guy or this particular emotion or this particular fight. I have to be strong. And that whole thing that grows inside you, and you become a firm human. And that's where, you know, you are not allowed to express yourself, and that becomes a part of your body and the behavior that you have. So it's really not easy to, you know, undo it, the whole thing in on the stage play, you know, where you are just crying all out. You are just expressing yourself. And that's really, how did you you took this as an opportunity to, you know, unlock all those emotions there. How you did that? Like, was it intentionally, okay, I can cry here out? Were you using that?
It was intentional. Like, I would see what was needed in the scene, what the character needed to feel, and I would go back to something in my life that would make me feel that way. So that would bring out that emotion in me. So it's kind of like method acting, I think they call it.
It's following a Meisner technique or some kind of techniques that you have, you know. At the same time, I've seen a lot of actors, you know, they are struggling because the journey of an actor is not what you see on the screen. You know, that it's a lot of fighting through life, then finding out time to doing it, and then, you know, rehearsing that part. So I've seen a lot of actors who are, whatever they are in their real life, they're not easy to break down those emotional parts because they're fighting a lot in their personal lives. So it's not easy for them to break that rigidness inside them and to express. So that's really a great part I learned from you.
It was fun too, because as an actress, I got to play things I've never been a cheerleader. I've always wanted to be a cheerleader, but I got to play one on TV multiple times, head cheerleader even. And I got to play valedictorian on the TV. I was never valedictorian, you know, so I got to redo my prom. My prom in high school, for real, was not so awesome, but on TV, it was magical. Yeah. So it was just amazing.
You got to live those moments.
Yeah. And I got to do new memories for them, you know.
You lived that anyhow, like, but now here's the thing. You told me more about how you started, what kind of plays you did, the musical part, musical theater. Now tell me about your first breakthrough. What was that? How old were you? Like, what was going on in your life and how that breakthrough happened?
I was, I think, 23. Yeah. And I was in LA. And I had been cast as a featured role, which means you don't like say anything. But so I was cast as a feature role as the babysitter of Alicia Silverstone and Jared Leto. And I was just going to be their babysitter. And it was so amazing because while they were setting up the lights and getting ready, I ended up talking with the director, Ralph Bakshi. He's truly my angel. I love him. And I didn't know him at the time. I was just, you know, he's like, what are you doing? Are you taking classes? And he was really genuinely interested in me. And I'm a talker. So I was like telling him everything. Yeah. And then he said, do you think the babysitter would talk in this scene? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, why don't you say something? You go ahead and throw in whatever you want. Well, I didn't want to be rude to my fellow actor and like surprise them. So I told Jared Leto, I was like, hey, Ralph said to throw in a line. He goes, great. Okay, well, just improv like whatever you want. So luckily we didn't have a rehearsal, which is really unusual. You don't usually like go straight to tape. So they said rolling and they taped, and Jared and I are like improvising a scene, talking. And as soon as they turned the camera off, they cut. I heard all this commotion behind the, you know, camera. And I was like, oh my gosh, I knew they were pissed. I knew it. And so then someone yells, I think it was the first AD, but someone yells, let's do another one without the babysitter talking. And so they said, rolling. And right then Ralph again yelled, babysitter, say your lines. And so we did it again, and they recorded it again. So that was it. That was like how I broke into SAG with, you know, a speaking role. And I and I mean, my first scene is with Jared Leto. I mean, it's just amazing.
Wow, that's...
So I'm so grateful for Ralph actually for seeing something in me and taking a chance on me. And I don't even know if he remembers, but he is amazing.
It's kind of impromptu, you know, it's just like a regular day for a director. He's looking for some creativity. Then you take a break and then, hey, something's not energy. There's no energy I am feeling in this particular scene. And he says, hey, what if babysitter talks?
Right.
And that's where you connect, because the way I'm seeing your energy, yep, it totally matches what he sees in you. What he saw in you. And yeah, it kind of clicked. And then also after taking a take, someone said not to do it. And then again, the director said, hey, go with that. And that completely worked. Wow. Yeah. This is cool. This is cool.
Yeah. It's really very cool. Yeah.
And it's memorable for you.
It was funny too. It's called The Cool and the Crazy. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I was supposed to be holding the baby and the baby kept crying the whole time. So the only way the baby wouldn't cry is if I was like, you know, jumping it up and down, kissing it. So I look like some stalker babysitter, like, mwah, mwah, yes, mwah, 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 kissing the baby.
Wow. That's cool. This is kind of, you still remember this.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I mean, because it's my first, you know, role, my first speaking role. You know, I hadn't had so many parts before, but they were featured things or, you know, they were background or whatever preparing me. And so, yeah, Ralph just gave me my chance. You know, it was really cool.
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
And I didn't know at the time. I knew Alicia Silverstone at the time, but I didn't know Jared Leto. And now I'm like, oh, my God.
Great. So how you moved on after that particular thing, you know, how things started changing for you? Were you going out for more auditions? How things rolled on after that particular role or thing? When you thought like, hey, you got a good character, what was that year?
Well, I think that really gave me confidence afterwards. And it gave me like, yeah, I'm union now. So then I could start going out for the union roles and everything. And it was pretty quick that I got union once I came out here. I wasn't non-union for too long. But again, the things I was going out for were the bubbly teenager or the crying, angsty teenager. So it just was really easy. I did have a fun role in The Nutty Professor. I was flying back and forth to see my mom. And I had auditioned in LA for the role of The Nutty Professor. I was a teenager. Well, I was on, all the hamsters were going crazy, and I'm on the hill, and the guy is trying to talk me into going to a party with him. I'm not interested until the hamster crawls up his leg and creates this big bulge that, you know, we think is something else. And then I'm like, oh my, okay, yes. And I auditioned for it, and they took a long time to cast it. So I went to go see my mom in San Francisco, and then they called me, and they're like, hey, you booked it. And you come back, and my mom was like, tell them you need a plane ticket. And I'm like, you don't say that. She goes, you're in San Francisco. You need a plane ticket to LA. You need to tell him that. Oh, and you know, parents don't know and everything. But I was like, I'm in San Francisco. I need a flight to LA. And I just heard silence on the phone. And I'm like, oh my God, I ruined it. My mom's ruined it for me. And they just said, we'll call you back. And I was like, mom, that's not, oh my God. And then they called me back and she said, you're the only one that director wanted. We'll fly you into LA. So I mean, you know, parents can be bold because they're not in the industry. They're like, yeah, be bold. But it worked out, actually. Yeah.
Oh, great. So now here's the thing. You worked in very popular sitcoms. One of them is Friends, NBC's hit show, the global hit show Friends. Also, at the same time, you worked in General Hospital and in Burn. Melanie Mellons in Burn. You played the character of the sexy Melanie Mellons in Burns. Also, daytime TV's General Hospital, and that time it was NBC's hit show Friends. So you appeared in very popular TV sitcoms. How was it now I'd like to know specifically about Friends. How was that experience of you, that episode not getting aired, but you rehearsing throughout that part? And overall, tell me about your journey on the sets of Friends.
It was really amazing. I mean, being able to audition for a guest starring role on Friends is huge anyway, but then it's a pivotal role because Matthew Perry Chandler was going to cheat on me or cheat with me, you know, on
season. Can you help me with the season and
sure.
all?
Sure. It was season five. It was the finale. And basically, Chandler and Monica were in Vegas and they were arguing. Monica had lunch with her ex-boyfriend, Richard.
Yeah.
And then Monica was really getting into craps, into gambling in Vegas. And so Chandler wanted to talk about it. And she said, no, she was at the table. So he drifts off. And originally he goes upstairs to his room. He orders room service. And I come in as a wait staff, bring him his room service. And then we end up talking and he ends up cheating on her. And I mean, this was like amazing. Yeah. And rehearsing with him was so wonderful and so easy and giving. And like, he could have been this, intimidating, star. But he wasn't. He was just a person. He was just really nice and he was giving and it was easy and comfortable. And we rehearsed it and we blocked it. And then I had come in the day before tape day. And there was a lot of commotion going on. I wasn't sure what was going on. And then I don't even remember who came over to me. It was probably the second AD. And he said, maybe it was, I can't remember who came over to me. But anyway, they said, so we're not going to do that. Matthew Perry said the audience will never forgive him for cheating on Monica, which is true. But I was
very true.
But then
how many days? How many days?
I was like, this is it. And then I thought I'd be cut because normally you're just cut if you're rolling.
But they were
so sweet. And the producers and writers said, but we're going to give you this other role with Jennifer Aniston and David Schwimmer and this other scene, but it was kind of funny because I was a flight attendant. And at the time I was pretty young and they're like, but you don't look old enough to be a flight attendant. So we're going to make your hair really big. So they like teased it out and everything like that.
Tell me about that scene that they gave. We can patch it up. We can, mention the season and
episode. Oh yeah. It was really, it's a funny scene actually on the airplane. Ross and Rachel are kind of fighting with each other. Rachel was like, I don't get embarrassed. I just don't get embarrassed.
Oh, really?
And so then he's like embarrassing her on the plane, saying,
oh, lady, all kind of
in the, bathroom. And she's like, oh my God. So then she's giving it back to him. And she pours water on his pants as she does the call button. And I come over and may I help you? And he looks like, I'm sorry, my friends had an accident and all stuff like that. So it was fun. And then as they're coming off the plane, I'm like, I hope you enjoyed your flight. And David Schwimmer's like, it was the best. And then Jennifer too said things too. So it was really nice. It was so comfortable. They just made me feel welcome. And it's just like a family on that set, everyone, it's just really happy. It's a friendly set. And they knew what they're doing, five seasons. And then, even more after that, of just, this is how we do it. Now at that time, it was before they were making a million an episode, but the time I did season five, we would tape in front of a live audience at 5 PM. And then we would go until the show ended and they would do the different, takes and different lines and stuff, not for my scene, but other scenes if like laughs weren't working in front of the live audience, then they would change it right then. And that was really cool too, working in front of the live audience. And then we went until
just recording.
Yeah. So we went until 2 a.m. It's so long. So my friends that were like in the audience waiting for my scene and stuff, they were like sleeping. They're like, okay, I'm up. And, we got to do the curtain bow afterwards and everything. But it was so late, which is so different than working on General Hospital, working on a soap opera. It's very quick. You do one or two takes. There's no live audience and you're done. Those are very quick days. And it's very, very different shooting a soap than it is a sitcom. Plus you have the five cameras on a sitcom and everything like that. So
it's kind of different set when it's a soap opera and when it's a sitcom, right? So soap opera, you're saying General Hospital was a soap opera where you just have very limited time and you have booked the slot. I guess there's a lot of commercial thing happening at the same time, no audience. And how different was soap opera, General Hospital, basically? How was that experience? I guess it was very rush.
It was very rushed. You have one or two takes. I didn't really, meet the cast. I didn't have a whole day with them. Like on Friends, you have multiple days during the week. We came in on like a Monday and then we didn't tape till Friday and you have lunches and time and everything like that. But General Hospital, like I think I was told on Friday, you're shooting Monday. And so I came in and I think I was out in 2 hours because you go into hair and makeup. As soon as you get there, you sign contracts, you get down to the set. They're like, okay, you stand over here and this and that. And it was very quick direction too. You better like pay attention, don't be talking and stuff. Because they just want to get it in one or two takes. They are so used to this. They film 5 days a week and so many years and they've got it down. So, you better remember your line, not be the one that doesn't
Wow. So this is kind of cool, Friends kind of sitcoms is usually one thing that, you get to live at the same time, what we are feeling, you are feeling the same. for that particular moment, because you're getting a live audience at the same time, and you're getting that quick responses. Also, what we felt, you also felt. Whereas, you know, working on a soap opera, it's what we felt was because of that particular emotion and that background noise, background effect that it gave the whole scene different curve. And you just delivered a lines where you had no idea. You're just looking to that person or the camera or the angle. And that's where you thought, okay, I delivered the lines. It's 2 hours and I'm now having my burger. I don't know what I did, but I just delivered what my job is. And you just it just gets out of your mind within like 1 month or two. Whereas friends, you know, you still remember what happened, like 6 days, 7 days that you did, still remembers. And that's like an iconic show, you know, a global hit. That's where that's a real difference between a sitcom and a soap opera. And thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Also, about you playing Burn. So what sitcom or what soap opera was it? Like what TV show was it?
For you it was a sitcom.
It was a sitcom, okay.
Yeah, and it was based in a gym. So Melanie Wallens was a porn star that was working out at the gym. So she had double Ds. So I had this like big cast of double Ds. And it was funny too, because but when I first showed up to set, I had them on, and like the crew and other cast members didn't know that they were fake. And they're like, oh my God, so I got to like, oh yeah, look at these big, huge, massive boobs that aren't mine.
It was really fun.
Marshall.
I can imagine now. I can imagine. Okay. Wow. That's different kind of sitcom. It was for adults, I guess. 18 plus, 18, 90. But it used to be.
It was really fun. Marshall Hilliard was a friend of mine, and he actually brought me onto that project. And it was so much fun playing her. And just the cast was amazing. And I love being in a gym anyway. I'm a gym rat. I work out all the time. So it was relatable to me. It was really cool.
Great. Okay. So this was kind of sitcom where you also, this was completely different from what you were. And it still got some kind of resemblance with your own character, but you really enjoyed being in that zone and, you know, just messing around with people with what role you were playing. I'm just looking at now as the host of Red Carpet Talk and Splash Talks, what have been some of your most memorable moments from hosting these shows? Like, you are a TV host. Now, this completely changes the whole dynamics of presenting yourself on television because you're now presenting yourself as Lisa Cash. Now you're presenting yourself. So how was that whole thing, and what was a memorable experience?
Yeah, hosting is really fun. I love hosting. And you're breaking that wall because now you're looking into the camera. Whereas, you know, when you do sitcoms, if you don't look in the camera, that would be bad. But hosting is like you're talking to the audience, you're in the camera. And to work with dogs, I love dogs. And so it was really cool because I remember showing up to set and there's just a line of dogs and owners ready for this Splash Dogs dock diving. And it was really cool. And I'm playing with all the dogs. They're like, okay, Lisa, come on, you know. I'm like, no, but look. And I didn't even know like that was a sport, this whole diving the dogs do.
Yeah.
Like, I want my dog to do that too. But it was really neat. And John Zander was my friend that brought me onto that. He produced that. And I'm just so grateful for that because I just love working with animals. That was the only time I've actually been able to work with animals, except for my dog does work. Actually, she works. She's on Petco commercial and she's on the cover of dog food bags and stuff. So she's in the industry. She did a commercial last year and stuff like that. So anyway, but I don't usually get to work with animals. So it was really cool. And then Red Carpet Talk, I was, you know, just the, it was like an audio thing. So I would just talk to people more, on the phone, and they would record it and stuff like that. So that was different too, just like voiceover type of work, you know. But I did get to interview, some celebrities, mostly musicians, specific names right now. It was a while back, but it was really neat too. Yeah.
Great. Right. Most of them, you love to work with animals, and I guess that show fulfilled your dream of working with animals, and that to get on TV then.
Yeah.
That's good. Now, here's the thing. You told me before you were doing modeling also. You're taking training and all that kind of thing in your high school journey, I guess, teenage phase and then 20s. You also appeared in Maxim's St. Paddy's Day Girl, also on international billboards for New Balance, and then Pages and Co. magazines such as LA Express, Oxygen Fitness, Femme Fatales, and 944. So how did you manage this particular, like, this is completely professional field, you know, and it's not just like, these are not just normal magazine that I just pronounced. They are properly professional magazines where you are doing an acting job, where you, your body is completely, you know, good, burns out, or, you know, there's a lot of other things happening to your body when you do day shift, night shift, 12 hours, 13 hours of shift, and then you go back. Now, after doing this, how you manage doing the modeling part and then to appear on the top pages of feature in the pages of these magazines, also on the billboards? How was your health related thing going on when you're doing this?
Well, I was mostly a fitness model, so I was very athletic. I was into kickboxing for a long time, both with personal trainers and classes and Taibo, Billy Blanks, who I love. So I love working out. And I loved being paid to work out. I actually did a commercial for Axe Body Spray where I had to run on the beach, and it was like for 3 days, and it was like my best, you know, thing ever. I loved it. I'm getting paid to work out. This is awesome. And everyone else is complaining and stuff. I'm like, this is best ever. But anyway, so yeah, I did a lot of fitness modeling and more, you know, the abs and sculpted and everything like that. And it was, okay. You know, I love modeling. And I think it's harder than people think. And they're like, oh yeah, whatever. But there's so much that goes into it. It's your body position. Whatever's going on in your mind is coming out of your eyes. You're co-creating with the photographer. And then there's the makeup and hair, you know, or wardrobe and everything. And I remember in Maxim, we were shooting in an Irish pub in New York, which was so cool. Because I was St. Patty's Day girl with the red hair and everything. And they were like, okay, so you're going to hold a guitar. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. But you're going to hold it with your arms crossed. And then you're going to flip your hair over. And you're going to like do all this unnatural stuff. And it was so uncomfortable and awkward. And it was like felt so hard. But then you see the image and it looks flawless and effortless, and it's so beautiful, and has the stained glass, you know, windows behind me, and the lighting is just so I just love it so much.
Wow. You can send me the picture, you know.
I will, like,
you can send me, so I can, you know, attach on this clip when this clip comes out. I'd be happy to share that. Okay, wow, this is great. So how do you used to you know, you told me you're a fitness freak now, completely working out on your body and always there, like, I guess 90% of your time goes on the fitness. What I see is you must be like with the food and all and diet and sleep and all. How do you use to manage the work-life balance in those period of where you're getting a good amount of work and a lot of work at that particular period? How do you use to do that? And how do you do it now? Like the work-life balance, meditation, yoga, anything?
Well, I think it's important to have a work-life balance. You know, you want to be well-rounded and everything. Yeah. And you have to take that time out for yourself. You know, I like to write everything down. Like, I have so much going on. I don't want to just put it on my phone. I'm old school. I like to write it out and see it, because once I put it on pen and paper, it gets out of my mind, and then I can be focused and present. And I'm like, okay, these are the chunks of time. This is what I have. And also, if I put in, this is the time I'm taking a workout class or a dance class or, you know, going to work out, then that's what I do. I have my schedule. And so for me, I find schedule really helpful. And then I've been a vegan. I started as a vegetarian 30 years ago and then transitioned into a vegan. And so health-wise, I mean, I do it for the animals, but the added benefit is the health of that suit too. And actually it's like opened my eyes and taste buds to all these other things. So that's been a journey too. I'm like, oh wow, there's so many foods out there. I didn't even realize, because I was eating just these, you know, things. I definitely, and then I meditate too. I find meditation.
You still do? Like in 2023 you do?
Yeah, Pranic Healing is the meditation with Master Ko. And he has like group meditations or meditations that you can like more pre-recorded and everything. I like a guided meditation, but just to sit with your own, you know, self and be quiet, or out in nature. That's like amazing. I'll just like sit on the ground and, you know, ground with like the moss underneath me or a tree next to me. And like, I live on a lake and it's just amazing. And I love it out here. Like the geese will be flying by in a formation. Deers are walking by. It's just incredible. And I feel like, you know, if we just like sit and just be quiet in nature, then like we can kind of remember who we are. You know, it's so important to find that balance, because career, yes, you know, work on your career and do all your networking and workshops and social media and everything, but it can't be your only thing. You know, there has to be a balance.
True. One thing I got, you like guided meditation, you know, where you need a voice to guide you to go through all those experiences. That's the one thing that you like. great to hear about your work-life balance and your take on work-life balance. Now, here's the thing. Can you recall in the initial phase, your first setback where, you know, you felt like, okay, this is the end, I guess. This is, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe in the music, maybe in the acting, but something that really teared you apart. And then you described a new version of yourself.
Okay. Well, the first financial setback, I had come out in LA in 1993 and I was doing a lot of TV. And I had heard, oh, the TV shows go on hiatus around mid-April until mid-July. But I guess I didn't really think, well, that's them. Like, I'm going to work still, you know? Oh. I just didn't realize, no, the industry pretty much shuts down. And I didn't know how I was going to pay my bills. And I was like, oh my gosh, like there's no work until mid-July. And it's much different now with all the streaming services and everything like that. But in 93, you weren't working, you know, unless you could find
it's
a film.
Shut down.
Yeah. Like, and so luckily my mom will be like, see, I told you I did have my degree in accounting. And so I went to temp work for a few months and stuff like that. And it all picked up again. And people promised me, oh, it'll pick up again July 15th or around there and stuff. And it did. And so, and then I knew, okay, so that's what happens. And that's like the season, you know, there's seasons of it. Not so much anymore with all the streaming and everything. But yeah, so that was a shock.
That was a shock for you.
Yeah. And then there's been like, I think at the end of the year, you kind of evaluate, you know, oh, what's going on? Yes, am I happy? And I've always said, because when I first started, my mom's like, how long are you going to do this? You have a degree in accounting and everything like that. And wasn't too happy about it. And I kept saying, I'm going to do it as long as I love it. That's my answer.
That's an artist.
Yeah. I'm not going to give myself a time limit or whatever, as long as I'm happy and I love it. So there was a time, I forget the year, but around Christmas time, I hadn't booked a lot. And I was like, is this it? Like, am I going to keep pushing? How long am I going to keep pushing on? Is there anything else that I would like to do? And I think actually it was kind of during the pandemic, you know, when we were reevaluating things. And I'm like,
That was completely. Yeah.
And I'm like, different. What else would make me happy, you know? And there are other things, you know, fighting for animal rights. I thought, you know, maybe I'll get like a law degree so, you know, I can help with their better treatment and activists and everything like that. And that was a passion to me. And I really actually had to work with like a coach, like to talk it out and figure out, you know, well, what should I do? And actually in doing that, that's what brought me to Atlanta because I was in LA for so long and my friend wanted to buy a house in Atlanta and he worked in the industry, but he also works on cruise ships and does magic. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'm going to Atlanta. I'm like, well, I've never been there. And he's like, why don't you come with me and just see what it's like just for a visit, you know? And then I was talking to my coach and she's like, well, how will you know if this is the right thing? And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I'm just going to know. And I didn't think she'd accept that answer, but she goes, I'll accept that. And I was like, really? Okay. And I'm telling you, we touched down in the airport at Atlanta and got the rental car and just driving away from the airport, literally being here an hour. I told my friend, I'm moving here, whether you are.
And whoa. He said,
really? I just felt it. It was so crazy. And then it just became even better being here for 5 days at the time and like a really quick thunderstorm and rain and how much space everybody has and how green it was and wildlife and nature. And so that to me was like fulfilling my spirit, you know, and the industry part came later when I actually got here and I really did see, wow, this is really cool. There's a lot of things filming here and there's even more things that are coming out. So it gave me this new spark. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This, and I'm in the right place doing it. I think I was getting a little burnt out in LA. I was getting with the monotony, with like, this is the same thing. And this is like, you know, so it just created a new spark and passion in my career and in my life and in my spirit. So I'm so happy.
Good. Great. Great. Great to hear that. Here's the thing. Was it difficult for you in the 90s to find out work and how, is it good for you? Is it easy now in 2023, you know, when you have to only rely on the people you know?
Right.
And now in 2023, how can you, you know, calculate that difference?
Well, it's kind of
like in 90s and now in here.
Yeah, it was definitely a different game in the 90s. I mean, there was hard copy pictures. You had to keep stacks of headshots and, you know, you had to invest in that. It was expensive. And there was no online casting like there is now. It was all, you had to have a top agent. That was the only way that you were going to get out. And I was really blessed that way in having a lot of top agents that would get me out constantly. I was with TGI and they said, oh my gosh, you get out and you book things more than our heavy hitters, like more than the star names that they had. And so that, and again, though, I was 18 to look younger. I was playing teenager. I find those roles very easy. I would like roll my eyes. Like I was like that kid, like, oh brother, you know? And then now there's so much online casting. And so, so many more people have opportunities, which is great, but that means there's so much more competition. I mean, I hear casting directors say sometimes they get 2,500 submissions for one role, especially
true.
Or even more, like on Stranger Things that everyone wants to be on. I would love to be on that. Anybody wants to hear? they get like 5,000 submissions for one line. You know, it's like so much. So 5,000. You really, So, and so now your headshot really needs to stand out because they're looking at like a little thumbnail when your submissions come in and they're going, no, you know, kind of like your whatever, swipe right or left or whatever. I'm not online dating, but all that stuff. And so you've got to stand out, you know, you have to, and then I heard a casting director just say, you know, well, it's in the eyes, you know, but I think it's also the whole thing. It's, you know, the colors of the backdrop, it's the color, you know, the emotions, it's everything. That picture is your calling card. That will get them to stop. And then they'll look at your resume or your, you know, reel, and then they'll go, okay, yeah, bringing them in, you know. So in some ways it's easier, in some ways it's harder. There's more competition, but there's more opportunities. So it's definitely
more production happening.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways I miss the old ways also, because when I first started in the 90s, everybody had black and white headshots except for redheads, because you can't tell if a redhead. It has red hair. So I really stood out. Yeah.
Again, that's a whole different game for you then. That was your key card then, having red hair.
I love it. Like I used to go to the Playboy Mansion parties a lot. I had a lot of playmates as friends, and it's a sea of blondes, and then it'd be me, you know. And my friend's like, I can always find you, you know.
that's unique.
I had a red car. I love the color red. I like standing out.
that's you. I know, throughout your career, it has been you. You love to stand out and you love to do the work hard, and then, you know, you get what you are looking for. That's the thing. Okay. Now here I'm coming on your first, your currently series that's streaming on Prime Video, Amazon Prime, which is by name Frontman. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about your character and what attracted you to this particular project?
Sure. Yeah. Frontman on Prime Video. I'm Senator Bateman. And Senator Bateman is just interested in winning. She doesn't care what she has to say or do or, you know, anything like that. So she's just like, how do I win? And Neil DeMonte is a friend of mine. We had done a couple movies together, and it was his debut directing this. So he said, I want you to read the script. I think you'd be good for the senator, which at that time I was like, okay, well, I've never played a senator. That's good. I'm getting into the older roles now, and that's good for me to do like a politician. And he said, yeah, but I need you to go ghetto. And I was like, I don't think I can do that. I don't understand what that means. And he goes, just read it. And so I read it. And so someone swindles her and says, oh, you have to get down with the people and go ghetto. You know, you got to relate to them and stuff. And I was like, okay. And he said, I need you to record something so the producers can see that you could go ghetto. We know you could be a senator and stuff like that. I was like, okay. So I called my friend to do this self-tape that wasn't even a big thing in LA. Apparently in Atlanta, they've been doing it since 2012. But so I was like, okay, you're going to record this. I'm not telling you what it is. You're not going to laugh because we're doing one take. And he's like, okay. And so we did. I was like, go, blah, 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 and everything. I had my hat back on and everything backwards. And then we cut and he started busting up laughing. He's like, oh my God. And so I said, I'm sending it. That's it. One take they get. And so then they loved it. And when I finally really got to work on the character and do it on set, and when I finished the scene, like the crew was clapping, and I thought, this is a new character that I love. This is so much fun.
They said, like, now they made some changes to the characters because of you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And also she's reoccurring now because originally I was just supposed to be in the one episode, but I ended up being in two episodes and I'm going to be in the next episode. So yeah. So now she's reoccurring.
Ooh, so that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's where your skills came into action. You know, that's where you just gave a little bit of a tweak of you being in that character. And that's where you locked yourself two more episodes.
Yeah.
That's a beauty. That's a beauty. Yeah. Okay. Now here's something related to your personal abilities. You know, how do you handle the pressures and uncertainties that come within a career in the spotlight? And what lessons have you learned along the way? What I mean by this is like how, because this is like, okay, there is a phase where you have a good amount of trouble, like where you're complaining, I have good amount of work. God, I have a lot of work to finish. I don't find myself to, you know, relax and breathe. And there's a phase where completely you're free and you have, what the hell am I doing? I have no work. I'm just sitting and breathing. So this is completely different phases, you know, every artist goes through. Yeah. How do you deal with that particular phase? And how do you, you know, what kind of lessons that you've learned from dealing with this uncertainties in this industry?
Yeah.
After being, you know, a popular star like you, someone mm-hmm. like you, how can you, tell us more about this?
Yeah, it was definitely a learning lesson, especially in the beginning. When I was younger, I was very like, okay, I'm going to work full time and go to school full time and I'm going to get my degree. And like, I filled that time with learning and, you know, growing as you do, you know, and, you know, your teenage years and early 20s and everything like that. And then when I came out and I was like, okay, yeah, I'll work. And then there's the hiatus or the Christmas or whatever. And I really had to learn to settle into that and trust that it's going to pick up again. You know, because it can be very scary. Like, oh my God, is this it? What's happening? Should I need to do something else? What's that? You know, so I really had to learn to calm down and enjoy those.
Anxiety is a lot.
Exactly. A lot of anxiety. Enjoy the downtime and trust that the, you know, next is coming. Because I was just a few weeks ago so busy with like three auditions and all the stuff coming on and everything. And then like last week it was Christmas. So, you know, or like not Christmas yet, but you know, preparing for Christmas.
Yeah.
I had friends in town and everything like that. So it was busy in that sense, but then there was no auditions. But I'm okay with that because I know like the second week of January probably there'll be auditions and stuff. But to find that like trust and comfort in, okay, let's enjoy the downtime and just be there and be present and be focused for the busy time. And it's interesting.
it's really a good game, you know. It's kind of a game if we see in that way, because there's a part where you are having good amount of time and then there's a part where you need to play patience, you know. Just be patient in the whole that's real a big test of you know, you as an artist, anyone as an artist, that's the patience is the big test in this field, where you have to just be patient and work on your craft and wait for the opportunity to land in, and then you show all this thing that you grabbed in this particular phase and then pull out in that one particular audition or whatever you do.
I think you said a key thing of continue to work on your career, because you know, we also had a long strike that we just came about, and during the strike I was working on my self-tape skills, on, you know, classes, on myself, on my body. You know, you can't just relax during those times and think, I don't know when we'll work again or whatever. You have to, you know, keep, doing everything you need to do for your career and everything like that.
Just work on your craft. That's the one thing that even you're working on. You have to do a lot of things. You are also working on your body. So that's a fitness freak that you have that really helps you, you know. Sometimes you're just, you know, lazy and tired, but you're a fitness freak now. That's a whole different game for you. You are always rushing up with some kind of energy throughout the day. So great to hear.
You also have to be good with your money, because it does come windfalls and then it's really lean years. So you have to be smart about your money. It doesn't mean that I don't like, you know, treat myself or whatever, but I have to be wise how I spend my money. And I'm not someone who's like designer labels very much or whatever, but you know, my thing is more this or, you know, whatever, but you just have to be smart about it. You know, you have to realize, okay, I got this windfall, but hold on. It might have to last me, you know, maybe it doesn't, I don't know, but you know, it probably will have to last.
You need to calculate that. Okay. Is this going to happen to me for next few months or just for this week? And then there's nothing coming for next few weeks.
Yeah,
you just have to be very calculative.
Yeah, and that's something people really need to think of too, because my cousin who makes a lot of money as a private pilot, he's like, I could never do what you do because of the uncertainty of finances, you know? And he's like, it would stress me out so much. So you have to be that type of person too, who is okay with that, you know, and okay with, you know, I don't know, people eating mac and cheese for a while, you know, or a couple noodles, you know? Not going out to dinner a lot.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it takes different kind of love for art and for particular this field for an acting. So, and that's why, there's this answer, because that's why people choose and then they really stick to it, because then they figure out a way. So there's jobs. So for example, anyone is having a job, what advice you'd like to, you know, what's your take on having a job and doing a job, a part-time job? What's your take on that for a new beginner or anyone who's starting? What's your take on having a job at...
Well, you mean having like a second job during the time?
At the same time, when they're just auditioning for a role, what's your take on that?
I think it's easier now having a part-time job, because before you had to, well, and in LA still a lot, there's in-person auditions and you could get a last-minute audition and you just have to be there. So it was much harder to have a part-time job and leave the job or not show up, or you have to choose like, oh, should I go to the audition? I'm here for acting. I don't know, you know, but I think it's a lot easier now with this whole self-tape thing. Yeah. Because usually I think they'll give you a few hours to do the self-tape or a few days. I know union rules now, they give us a few days. So you can be at your work and go, oh, I got an audition, but it's not due till Monday or something like that. So then you can go home and tape it or whatever. So it is much easier now if you want to have a part-time job, but just be careful to not let that job take away the time that you would spend on your craft and your career and your auditions. Don't be like, okay, well, I'm just going to spend 5 minutes on this audition because I got to go to work or whatever. Still invest. If you're going to do that, you know, still keep the investment in both, you know, places. So, yeah.
Good to you.
But I see that a lot in Atlanta. I see a lot of people have like normal jobs because of the self-tape thing and stuff. And that's great. You know, if you have a flexible job, or, you know, you're able to do that time-wise, then that's good.
Got it. And that also helps a lot of, you know, just to maintain your financials, you know, good cash flow coming in when there is no work, or you can maintain that particular time period where you can do the online job. And then you can maintain your offline where you need to visit the studios or the casting offices where you can, you know, particularly give that particular audition and then go back and switch back to the online job.
Yeah.
So I guess,
that's how you have the money to invest in classes and coaching and the things that you need to do. So
in your headshots and all.
Yeah. Yeah, lighting, that's self-tape, you know,
buying the light on Amazon. And that's one thing. So it's good to know all the things that you did till this date and the way that you roll. You got a good amount of energy. I guess the one thing that I see from you is you're talking, you're expressing yourself, and this is just 1% of you. What I'm seeing at this moment, you're much more in person. You'd be much more energetic, and I guess from the day you started till this now, that's how the music came inside you, and that's how the musical drama thing happened for you, because this energy that was required, you know, to do this all kind of activities that you did. And you told me about how you grew up, your mom being a big part of yourself, single parenting for you, then you chasing all the musical drama, musical theater, music, then acting happened, and then you thought, okay, acting is really working good. You went out for it, you fought for it, and then all kind of roles were just like dream roles that you wanted that to happen in your real life. You were getting all those roles and you're playing it with all of your energy. You are really energetic, also your fitness peak. Now, till this whole of 20 plus years of journey, I can say.
30 years.
Yeah, 30 years. And you got a lot of experience, met a lot of people. You're seeing the phases changes, you know, the decades where there's a shift in the industry, you know, every 5 years. You're seeing all those shifts from Friends till now, Stranger Things. You're seeing all the shift with the castings, where people meeting directors, producers, the change in the medium, now OTT streaming platforms. So, for example, you've seen those. Now people who are just starting out are not seeing these changes. You know, you are the one who has seen generations change, you know, in that particular, the media from, you know, big screen to now mobile and OTT, then castings have changed. So, for example, with all this experience that you gained throughout this soul changings, throughout these 30 years, if there's an artist, if there's a girl who's just like you, you know, single parent or normal, just normal parenting, but is the girl who's looking out to be something in this industry, in LA, in UK, what advice you'd like to pass on from yourself as advice to every artist, every single artist, that will help them, guide them to be a better one in next few years?
Well, for one thing, you have to be ready for rejection and criticism. And that can be really tough. And so, but I just want you to be aware of that, because some people think, oh, it's just going to happen. And, oh, booking a commercial is so easy or whatever. But you have to put in the work. It takes work. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's very rare that someone's an overnight success. So give it time, but make sure you're ready, because if it happens tomorrow, then you need to be ready. You know, you're not to be like, oh, wait, I got to take this class, or I need to lose 10 pounds or whatever. You have to always be ready, even if it is the holidays, or even if it is during a strike or whatever. You always need to be ready. And not that you need a thick skin for the criticism and rejection, but just be prepared for it. And no, it is nothing about you. Like, don't take it personally. It's just they want it this way or whatever. It doesn't reflect on you. So don't take it inside. And I feel like, be well-rounded too. Yes, I want you to focus on your career and yourself and be ready, but have other hobbies, have other interests, because not only does that make you more well-rounded, like, people who are in the industry and they're asking about you, they don't want to hear about acting. Like, you know, unless they're really saying, like, what did you,
what kind of person are you?
Yeah, they want to know you and what, you know, makes you happy. And besides acting, what is that, you know? So the hobbies will make you more well-rounded, give you something to talk about. And they give you also just life, and, you know, being well-rounded in life makes you more happy anyway, you know? Find what centers you, find what gives you peace. And hopefully you have a support system that's positive. It's hard when the friends or family are either jealous or like, well, how long are you going to give this? You know, like, how long are you going to try this or whatever? Yeah. So, and that happens. And if it's family, you know, then that's okay. Just be like, well, you know, I got this. It's okay. You know, and don't try to bring in their input, you know, like, try to get the support group from friends that will lift you up, whether it's in your class or other hobbies that are like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, I have friends that aren't in the industry and they're like, what? That's crazy cool. You know, sometimes if you have friends in the industry, you know, it's harder. Sometimes they could be jealous or whatever, but hopefully you find a good support system, because it's so important. We're not in this alone. You know, it all helps to support each other and just be this well-rounded person. So.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for this advice. I know this is going to help a lot of, young girls and young boys who are entering in this industry, the couple of 18-year-olds, you know, 19-year-olds who just started because they loved a film and then they thought, hey, I'm going to join and I'm going to be an actor. And then they just jump in and they say, what the hell is this? This requires a lot of patience and a lot of hard work. And then you have to be ready whenever the call comes in. It's not like, hey, I was ready this time. Now I'm not ready. You have to be there. That's one thing I got from you. It's like every single time. And most of all, because you are a model and you were doing modeling for big magazines, you know that have good control over your body. Over your body is really important. What you eat is really important. And then to maintain that for a good amount of period is really, what do we say, you know, a challenging job in this field. So thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for sharing all this wonderful memories and the events that you had in last couple of months. Also, the big breakout was the friends thing. Thank you for sharing that particular thing with me. You know, everyone is going to enjoy this. This was really wonderful knowing you. I never thought you'd be this energetic. I never had any. I saw your interviews, you know. I never thought you'd be this energetic in this interview. I thought you'd be, you know, just, you know, talking to me very professionally. But you were like going all those things when you were telling about this. You know, that really gelled me up. And that really, you know, wow, she's cool. You know, she really enjoys what she does. And still, she's enjoying this particular session also. That was cool. And I really loved this. And I'm really grateful that you said yes to be on the show. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it too. It was so much fun. And you're easy to talk to. So.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was preparing. I was very excited for this interview, but I thought like December, it really worked. Most of the time we schedule things and it doesn't, because it's holiday for you, you know, it's holiday season. And that's really tricky time to, you know, you may reschedule this because it's Christmas. But it worked. And I'm happy that it worked. Merry Christmas to you.
Me too. Thank you to you too.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And hey, everyone, I am Ajay Tambe, the host and producer of Create Your Use.in podcast. And now I'm signing off.